Now more than ever, people want to know if there's anything they can do to help. And the answer is yes at BioLife Plasma Services. Your plasma is desperately needed to create life-changing medicines to help treat people with immune deficiencies, those who are most at risk right now. When you donate plasma at BioLife, you can earn up to $700 in your first month. Check out our new St. Paul location opening March 20th or visit BioLifePlasma.com to learn more about donating plasma. BioLifePlasma.com.
Hey, welcome back to Two Mics. You're on with Colonel Mike and Dr. Michael Schuer. Today we have a very important guest with us. We have the former Undersecretary of Commerce for President Donald Trump, Corey Stewart, live in Virginia. And Corey's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on with the lobbying of AT&T, which is CNN, Time Warner, to broker deals with the Chinese telecom. And he's been in the news the last few days, and he's an international type lawyer. He'll tell us exactly what's going on and who's doing it. And this is the big question. Again, we're back to the establishment, the neocons. You're on with Dr. Michael Schuer, Colonel Mike. Corey Stewart, welcome to Two Mics. This is your first time on. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. It's great to be on. I was in the Trump administration as Undersecretary for Industry and Security in the Department of Commerce for President Trump. And while I was there, you know, we were responsible for placing sanctions on entities that were involved in human rights abuses, sanctions against mostly Chinese entities, but also some Russian and other countries as well, involved in, you know, threats to U.S. national security, and as well as other things. But One of the entities that we are about to place, we are in the process of placing on the entity list. This is basically the government's blacklist, the companies that you, as a U.S. company, can't be dealing with, is China Telecom. Now, China Telecom is just what it sounds like. It's a Chinese government-owned telecommunications company. They operate cell phone service. They do a lot of other telecommunication services, kind of like AT&T is in the United States, or Verizon, et cetera. But the reason we were going to place them on the entity list is because they were using cell phone technology, the cell phone service, and they were using the other telecommunication technologies to track, identify, spy on ethnic minorities, particularly the Uyghur population in Western China, which is a Muslim minority population of about 10 million people in Western China, and also Tibetans and other minorities in China. And what they would do with that information is hand it over to the Chinese government, and with the Chinese government, the Chinese police state would then apprehend these people, place them in what there's no better word for it than a modern day concentration camp. And inside of those concentration camps, there's all kinds of things that are going on, widespread reports of gang rape, of the women in there, torture, and potentially executions and other unspeakable acts that I won't go into. But that is why, you know, and China Telecom was helping the Chinese government to do this. So we were going to place them on the entity list, put the sanction on them. That's when we got the telephone call from Ed Gillespie, the executive vice president of AT&T, who called myself and Secretary Ross and begged us not to place China Telecom on the entity list. Why? Because they disputed the human rights abuses? No, not because of that. They didn't want them on there because China Telecom is AT&T's business partner in China, and they were worried that if the United States government placed sanctions on China Telecom, that the Chinese government would retaliate against AT&T and terminate their contract with them. So here you had AT&T doing the bidding for essentially the Chinese government.
So our listeners, they're pretty diverse intellectual listeners. We have listeners around the globe. Did you hear that? That's AT&T, which is CNN, and CNN is Time Warner. And, you know, a lot of us are leaving Google and YouTube and all this. And maybe you have AT&T, maybe you have Time Warner, maybe you have CNN. These are things you have to consider, especially Christians. We have to consider this. I mean, they're Muslims, okay, but they're still God's people, and they're being tortured, raped, whatever. Mike, what do you have to say?
Well, I think the fact that Gillespie ran for governor of Virginia is a point worth noting, too, that he's supposed to be a Republican and concerned with the existence and the survival of the Republic. I'm at the point now, there was no easier country on earth to deal with after the fall of the Soviet Union than China. And yet we have pretended that somehow China is not worse than Stalin. It always has been. It is entirely unreliable. Now we're stuck with this dilemma of not just trying to fix the broken economic bilateral trade issue between the two of us, but now we're getting stuck in these issues like Hong Kong and the Uyghurs. Now, both of those are terrible things, but we brought up the Chinese government and the Chinese economy from dirt to be a rival. And now we're acting surprised that they're not nice people. And the idea, when the British abandoned the Hong Kong people in I think 1997, our administration backed that to the hilt. Now, only an idiot in the United States, especially in the elite, only an idiot could believe that the Chinese were going to honor their word for 50 years. So I remember just saying, this is crazy. Why would you trust them? You can't do anything about it. If they renege, you won't go to war over it, and you shouldn't go to war over it. Now, well, the Uyghurs.
Yeah, I think this guy, Ed Gillespie, also not just ran. I was going to speak to Mr. Stewart about that, about his former career as a politician. But Ed Gillespie was the RNC chairman,
Well, he's on the take.
He was a Bush guy, too.
Yeah, well. But anyway, the only point I wanted to make is two things. There's nothing we can do about it. They're going to kill as many Uyghurs as they want. The only people who could stop it would be the Saudis and the rest of the Muslim world going in there, sending guns and money to fight the Chinese. Hong Kong was dead on arrival after 1997. There's nothing we can do there. And certainly it's not worth a war. Unfortunately, we're tied at the hip with the Taiwanese. And we'll have to fight because of treaties if that occurs. But it's, at the end of the day, there's not a lot we can do about this if those are the issues we focus on. And it's a roundabout way to get to the point. But my point is, the way to get at the Chinese is to damn them economically, drive them right over the cliff economically, because they can't do it without our help. They can't exist.
Mr. Stewart, are there certain, I seen in an article, there's certain companies such as BlackRock International, Vanguard Group, Wells Capital, they're all investors behind this, aren't they?
Well, virtually every American corporation worth its salt is invested in China in some way, shape, or form. And I do agree with the doctor that the way to ultimately, we have to confront this foe, and there's no other way to put it. I mean, you can't look upon China as a partner. They are hell bent on dominating, making the 21st century the Chinese century, and that means getting rid of the United States, or pushing us aside, or pushing us down, or pushing us away. And they're bound and determined to do it. Now, I just think that one of the things that bothers me about these corporations, like AT&T, which is CNN's parent. As they preach morality, they're always talking about what we call virtual signaling, talking about how virtuous they are, and then lecturing to us about how we need to change our lives to conform with their morality. When in fact, They are putting profit above human rights. They're putting profit above, over and above U.S. national security interests. They're putting profit over and above the human rights abuses of the minority population in China and elsewhere. So that's why you can't listen to them. And certainly we should not be tolerating in this country when companies like CNN or AT&T or Amazon or Google or Facebook, et cetera, are trying to limit our speech as Americans because they think that they have a superior morality. That's part of my issue here. Now, to go to the bigger issue about China, yes, I think there are better ways, like the doctor said, to get to the heart of it, to try to weaken China or at least limit their economic power and hence their political and the military power as well. But one of the ways to do that is to sow disruption inside of China and to do it through the repressed minority populations in Western China. China's Western borders several of former Soviet republics, most of which are predominantly Muslim. We can work with the Saudis. We should be working with the Saudis and others to allow these people in Western China to defend themselves against the Chinese government. And I do think that bringing small arms through Western China, I think that's something the United States should pursue and in conjunction with its allies.
Doctor?
That's what we did in Afghanistan. And it worked, but we didn't have the common sense to leave after we won. Afghans won. Now, if we get involved in Western China, what's the point of that? What have we got to win there? We can protect some Muslims. Fine. I guess that's worth doing, but not at the chance of risking any kind of conflict with the Chinese. I also think that the one way to get the minorities and get Chinese people up in arms against the regime, or at least try to do that, is to make that country suffer economically. Drive its economy to the brink of disaster. That's the way to create, some kind of opposition domestically. Because I don't think there is a great deal of resentment about the treatment of the Uyghurs anywhere in China. China is a very racist country and always has been. Looks down on us as inferior human beings like the Democrats do. So, running guns in there is fine, and it would help. It would kill some Chinese military and Chinese police and officials and that kind of thing. But the retribution against that would be enormous. And how far do you want to get into a tit for tat in a place where there's no railroads or roads? It's very, very difficult, sir.
Let me ask a question, Mr. Stewart.
I guess to respond to that, if I could, real quickly. I completely agree that the way to sow discord inside of China and to put pressure on the Chinese government and actually essentially to weaken them is to try to undermine them economically. But that's not the only way to sow discord. No. In this country, where was there the greatest discord over the past couple of generations? During Vietnam. And then if you saw at the tail end, one of the factors that led to the collapse, I would argue, of the Soviet Union was the war in Afghanistan. Families having to send, if I could finish, please, send their young men, sending their young men into Afghanistan. They're getting killed. And that circled back around into the Soviet population, sowing discord. I think we should be doing the same thing in China. China gets involved and is in a civil war in its own borders. It's going to weaken the country.
I would say you're correct. I would just make one point, though. While that's going on, the American business community is going to continue supporting the Chinese and enhancing their capabilities against the Uyghurs, either in detection of them or in some other form. There's no way, I think, to really hurt the Chinese as long as the American business community is siding with the Democrat fascists domestically and supporting our enemies overseas. I don't know how we get how that hole can be plugged. That's got to stop, because we can't challenge them with small arms while the American business community is giving them extraordinary communications and IT capabilities to use against that enemy. That's all I would say, sir.
Yes, I completely agree, which is why, you know, in the Trump administration, we were in the process of placing the sanctions on China Telecom. And that wasn't the only company, by the way. One of the things that we did at the end, when in the last month of our administration, by the way, we suspended sales of $400 billion. That's with a B. That is the correct number. $400 billion worth of semiconductor chips to Huawei to prevent Huawei from dominating the 5G industry for the next generation. But there are a lot of other things we're doing as well to try to slow Chinese development of telecommunications technology.
That's a great effort, and I'm afraid they'll try to undo it now. They've undone so many things in the first 6 weeks. It's almost astounding.
Yeah.
Mr. Stewart, I want to ask a question about our allies, so-called allies in Europe. What were our allies thinking while you were there at the Department of Commerce? Were they in joint agreement with what the Americans were doing? I doubt very much.
Well, first of all, we all know as educated people, anybody, you know, when you understand history, the Europeans have a history of talking big and delivering nothing, right? I mean, this before World War II, same thing. You know, talking about, you know, what was going on in Germany and yada, yada, but they never did anything about it until they were absolutely forced to. And then you got the Cold War and everything else. It was always the United States with the backbone and with the possible exception of the British, the rest of Europe essentially being completely spineless. Now, I would say there's an exception to that rule now, and that is that the Eastern Europeans, who suffered under almost 50 years of communist domination, do have backbone, and that's why you find the Czechs, the Poles, and others together, and other NATO allies together with the United States in fighting in certain parts of the world. But there were certain nations in Europe, and I have to say, you know, my wife's home country, Sweden, was one of them, the Dutch in particular, who were very, very concerned about what was going on in China, and were very concerned about Chinese domination of 5G and other communications technologies that are vital to the future economy worldwide. And they did cooperate with us, as did the Australians and the Japanese and the Koreans. So we do have some strong allies and who do recognize the Chinese threat. But for every one of them, there's also most of the European allies would prefer to continue to sell whatever they can to the Chinese, while the rest of us try to do something about it, and our allies are undermining our efforts.
Can you tell us a little bit about this company, Xiaomi, the telephone company? Do you know about this company, Xiaomi?
Xiaomi, you mean Huawei?
No, Xiaomi.
No, I'm not familiar with them.
X-I-A-M-O-Y. This was another company that was trying to mingle their way into America through China Telecom to put their products here, and they were frozen by the Department of Commerce. Were you familiar with them?
You know, that was probably right before I entered the Commerce Department, but there were several Chinese, in fact, there was hundreds of Chinese entities on the entity list, and most of those were placed on the entity list during my time or slightly before that. But so, you know, Huawei and China Telecom are not alone.
Well, I think also, can you? I'm sure you know the answer to this, and we do. There's not a lot of American companies that can go in and do what China does here in America, right? I mean, right or wrong, you don't get the leniency of partnering as easy as you do in America, or listing on stock exchanges. So the American people, they have money invested in these, let's say, these funds like the Vanguard Group or BlackRock. And a lot of people may not even know that their funds are being used with companies like China Telecom, where they're doing genocide.
I think that's absolutely true. It is so intertwined. Our economies are very, very intertwined at this point. And there was a lot of talk in the Trump administration, as you probably know, toward the end especially, of decoupling our two economies. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it would have been feasible, to be honest with you. But at a bare minimum, the Chinese need to be shamed for their repression of minority groups, for their other human rights abuses that are going on in China. And when you shame the Chinese government and you shame the Chinese entities who are involved, you must also shame the Western nations and our allies in Asia as well. You need to shame them for doing business with them. And that is the only way you're ultimately going to have any effect, in my opinion.
Mike?
Well, I think that's true, although I think Bill Clinton killed shame in America. It's no longer a very good tool to use.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, who's going to call the kettle black? We are probably the greatest abettor of the Chinese in terms of economic help. The shame would fall on us as much or more than anybody else in the world if we tried to do that. I don't know, sir. I don't know what the answer is to this, but I know that we're getting used by politicians who are on the take from the Chinese in both parties, and we're getting used by the American business and banking community. So there's lots of problems at home that could be addressed within the confines of our political system that would hurt the Chinese. It doesn't necessarily have to be actions taken directly against China. But if we cut things off for them, that's gonna beggar them a little bit. Hit them where it hurts. I think they're, when you have a class of people who are racist and feel themselves superior to you, the idea that the less superior person will shame the more superior person is a little, I think, optimistic.
You heard you could save big when you bundle home and auto with Progressive, so you went online to check it out. But then you saw a link for a survey about which type of bread you are. And now you're on question 17, barely scratching the surface of your bread identity. You always thought of yourself as a brioche, but are you actually more of a pumpernickel? Ah, yes. They said it was easy to save money bundling with Progressive, but they forgot about the rest of the internet. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Now more than ever, people want to know if there's anything they can do to help. And the answer is yes at BioLife Plasma Services. Your plasma is desperately needed to create life-changing medicines to help treat people with immune deficiencies, those who are most at risk right now. When you donate plasma at BioLife, you can earn up to $700 in your first month. Check out our new St. Paul location opening March 20th or visit BioLifePlasma.com to learn more about donating plasma. BioLifePlasma.com.
Right. I mean, that's certainly their attitude. And, you have been seeing, it's interesting. I think ultimately the way to I don't want to use the word, but I'll use it anyway, to contain the Chinese is you do have to have this broader coalition, right? The United States can't do it alone. We just can't. But what we're starting to see is our European allies, especially, like I said, in Eastern Europe and the Japanese and others, who are beginning to realize that we just can't turn a blind eye to the threat that China poses anymore. And then when you begin to have this coalition of countries who's willing to do it, which is the pretty much the rest of the world, and I think there's the opportunity to do that, then you can. Now, for example, one of the things you can do over time is, and I know that both you gentlemen have some experience in other parts of Asia, and that is that to try to undermine the Chinese manufacturing sector, we can begin to divert more of our outsourced manufacturing from China over to other Asian low-cost manufacturers such as Vietnam and others. And I think that over time that can help. Now the other thing, this has got to be a multifaceted way of trying to control and disrupt the Chinese. And one of the things that they've done in Africa, for example, is they've secured all of these contracts on rare minerals and mineral deposit. That's why they're in Africa. They did it, beginning 20 years ago or so, to in the name of humanitarianism. Look, if you give us this contract on these mineral deposits, we're going to build you a railroad. We'll build you some infrastructure, etc. Well, a lot of that stuff that they built was junk and it's falling apart. And now there is resentment that's growing in Africa as well. And I think that we should try to foment that. But it's going to take an effort by the United States, not just the United States, but its allies as well.
Also, it's going to take an administration, I think, Mr. Stewart, that is not the Biden administration, because we are really, I mean, to go from Donald Trump, a great American trying to make America great again, and he did, and having people like you, strong people like you on board in agencies, and you know what a rough grind that was. I can just imagine what you went through being at the Department of Commerce as a Republican conservative working for Trump. I could just imagine what everything underneath you was looking at. But, you know, these people are so embedded for so many years within the agencies, all agencies, you know what I mean? And now we have a guy who's alleged and pretty much alleged plus, you know, dealing with China in many ways, who's our president and his son. So it's going to be a hard grind. But, you know, there's people like you still out there, Dr. Mike and I, and there's the Epic Times, and there's other good networks that are trying to get the word out. And I hope to God that some of our Muslim ally countries would step into the picture, like you say. Mike?
Yeah, I don't know why the Muslims haven't tried to move in there already to help the Uyghurs. The Uyghurs came in to fight in Afghanistan against the Soviets, so there is there's a debt there. And that could be exploited by the Saudi government, certainly, although Biden has chosen to attack this particular Saudi king for some reason. But that's, again, that's a long, grinding haul. And I don't know if we have the wherewithal in this country to exist in the same way as we did, say, when we supported the Afghans, which took 15 years. One thing I would say is what the Chinese need to have in their mind is to be afraid of us. And right now, with Mr. Trump temporarily, I hope, out of command, they have no reason at all to be afraid of us now. It is clear that Biden has dropped his drawers and bent over, and along with his family and along with many other people. And the Chinese, whether rightly or wrongly, think they're in the driver's seat, and they'll drive it. They'll drive us to perish. They support and they foment all of this crap about social justice, about minority rule. They back, that clown that was interviewed yesterday for one of the HHS things in Congress, that transgender who wants to let six-year-olds decide if they want to get mutilated their sexual organs. Then they'll support all of that because they believe in rotting the society away. That's the reason they sent so much fentanyl to this country. I can't, for the life of me, I can't understand why we have not collared that problem with them instead of just asking them, exacting a cost for them. The fentanyl thing, the Chinese have killed hundreds of thousands of Americans, but we've also spent billions and billions of dollars on a problem that's not fixable until you stop the inflow. So, you know, I'm an old man, and I'm kind of getting more black and white as I get older, but I can see so many handles to grab here if we had an administration like the Trump administration was, and could have been spectacular in its second administration. But I fear the Chinese don't fear us enough. And that's kind of all the point I was going to make here.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. I do think that one of the points that you raised is kind of interesting, Doctor. When you raise the point of when I suggested that we start to funnel through with our allies small arms over to the minority populations of Western China to allow them to defend themselves. And you mentioned the idea of potential retribution that the Chinese may inflict on the United States, or, you know, what they might do in response. That is the same response that I got from other members of the administration when I raised the prospect of this. But
that's because you have an adequate education and the rest of them don't. There's nothing there's nothing you can do in this world off your own hook that's not going to yield some pain to you in response. But that's just the cost of doing business, I think, sir.
Yeah, well, But it's interesting because what you just said about fentanyl, the Chinese are already doing whatever they possibly can do to undermine the United States. They're already, you know, producing fentanyl. It's being shipped off to Mexico. It's being laced. They're using it to lace other drugs that are coming into this country, coming into our universities, coming into our communities, coming in, and it's being used and it's killing in record numbers. Not just, you know, they're killing the flower of American youth is what
you're right.
They're doing.
You're right.
And this idea that, you know, well, we better not do that to the Chinese. We better not, because they might do something worse to us. They're already doing the worst to us.
Right.
This
right.
is a one-sided Cold War. We just haven't woken up and realized that we're in it.
Yeah. I have to Stuart, just for 1 second, Colonel, okay?
Go ahead.
I've flapped too much. But I had the responsibility for assisting the Afghans from 1986 to 1993. And it was a very effective program. We didn't win that war. The Afghans won it through their endurance and through their cruelty and through all the other attributes it takes to win a war. And fortunately, no one in this country knew about it or cared very much about it. Once it was won, the elite in this country deployed to try to build a Jeffersonian democracy in a Muslim country 2,000 years old. And the lesson I took from that is we are not possible. We are not capable in the present situation in which the way our elite thinks and governs to be a cold-blooded kind of approach. Arm the Afghans to kill as many Soviets, to get the Soviets out. They succeeded, go home. Let them, they've governed themselves for 2,000 years. Let them keep doing it. And I'm afraid what we'd see this in the same way is this, it's this idea that Powell came up with it. If you broke it, you own it. Well, we didn't break Afghanistan, the Soviets did. And the Chinese broke Xinjiang and the Uyghurs. So you really have to have a cold-blooded approach at the start. Arm them, yes, but we're not getting involved in reconstruction and humanitarian aid and all of that stuff. Muslims got lots of money in the Middle East. Let them do it.
To date, we have $1 trillion cost. Mr. Stewart, I'm sure you're aware. There's $1 trillion cost on the Afghan war to date. That's without the bodies. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't include Iraq or the other places where we
right. Just right. The Afghan war. It's $1 trillion. To just wrap it up, I'd like to go just a little bit to your background, if you don't mind. You were a chairman of the Prince William County Board of Supervisors, which is probably the second largest county, I think, in Virginia. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the second largest locality in the state, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you were way back when you came on the board and then you became a chairman. And how many terms did you serve back then?
Too many.
But tell us a little bit of I remember going over the bridge from Fairfax County to Prince William County, and it was really, it was underdeveloped and it needed things to be done. And you were just young, vibrant board of supervisors guy who became a chairman, and it became an economic wonder. I mean, look at Prince William now. You're still living, right?
Well, you know, I served four terms on that board. And of the 16 years I was there, 13 of them is the countywide elected leader, the chairman of the board of the county. But it was very simple. It was basically bring back an old term, Reaganomics. We cut taxes, we cut regulations, we focused government spending on only those things that government could do, building roads, building schools, building other government infrastructure. And letting the private sector, and we had a lot of public-private partnerships where we had private entities who were doing certain social service functions rather than, you know, the kind of the cold hand of government. We did all of that, and as we did that, and we also cracked down very, very strong on crime, particularly on illegal immigration. That's where, you know, we became kind of noted for that in 2007, when we became the largest locality in the country to put in place 287G, which allows the local government to hold, identify, and to hand over to the federal government criminal illegal aliens. When we did that, the crime rate dropped by nearly 50% in 2 years. Wow. That increased the quality of life. It brought in more business activity. It was really kind of a simple formula of just doing the conservative thing. Conservative governance works, especially when your neighbors who are governed by the left-wing Democrats are doing their thing. It's an easy thing to succeed when you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, you also ran for governor against this gentleman who came crying about AT&T. His name was Ed Gillespie. He was an RNC chair. He worked for Bush, W. Bush. And you ran a very good race, very solid race. I voted for you, and Mike did too. When I lived in Virginia, I voted for you. We thought that you had it. You would have beat McAuliffe, no question. You were the better of the two candidates. But apparently, just like the problem Virginia has today within the Republican Party, they can't, if we could say it, they can't get their shit together, let's be honest. And, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, if they would have, you know, just put, I guess, more money and more backing towards you, I think you would have took McAuliffe out. What do you think, Mike?
I think so. I think the Republican Party in this state probably, and Mr. Souter know more than I do, and so are you, Colonel, but they just seem to me to be lacking in a fighting spirit to take on the Democrats. And the way I see it right now, why isn't there a bigger push from the Republican Party about these 300,000 votes in Fairfax that got switched at the last moment during the 2020 election? I don't hear an awful lot about that being investigated. The idea that young man who was running for Senate, a veteran, a maimed veteran, a good speaker, a solid character, was going to lose that badly to Warner is to me a sure sign that somebody was switching votes somewhere. And I would think that the Republicans ought to be up in arms about that. But again, maybe I'm just not hearing about it.
Well, you know what I think the issue here is that if you talk about election irregularities, stolen election, voter fraud, if you even talk about those things, you're banned from Facebook, you're banned from Twitter, you're shamed by the mainstream media, and they have shut down discussion of that. And you got to ask yourself this question. If they're so intent on shutting down discussion about something, that must mean that there's something they fear.
Oh, absolutely.
In that discussion, because there's definitely an element of truth. And then you hear the left saying, well, 60 different court decisions, including Trump judges, have ruled that there was no voter fraud and that it's all a bunch of baloney. Well, the truth is, our court system is not they're not investigative bodies. Our courts did not do investigations. There never has been a comprehensive investigation of the voting irregularities, the alleged voting irregularities that occurred in 2020. The courts only make decisions based upon law, based upon the facts that they have at hand right in front of them. Well, there never were these facts established because, not because they don't exist, but because there never was an investigation. And they've shut down discussion. And because our current, you know, the way we communicate today is Facebook and Twitter, you know, we've got these monopolies essentially that control our speech that must be broken up. But in the meantime, if you don't want to get banned on Twitter or Facebook, you can't even discuss the topic.
Amazing. Mike?
No, that's too true. Although I think a Republican in the legislature in Richmond does have a pulpit to speak from within the chamber. He can't be shut up there. It's a subject worth doing. You know, it just made such an impression on me. We happened to be down in Lexington and all through the valley a couple times during the election campaign, and for every there was so many pro-Trump indications in the southern part of the state that the unevenness of the defeat really, really struck me strongly. And now we have this word about these 300,000 votes. And Jesus, God, that's a lot of votes to be playing with.
Well, the other thing is, Mr. Stewart, I think you can attest to that. The money that came in from New York, the Bloombergs, the Soroses, I mean, they packed tons of money into that state in district attorney elections, state attorney elections, and so on. So, you know, it was a heavy grind. You guys had to raise a lot of money, too.
Yeah, here's the thing about Virginia is that whatever the Democrats did in terms of election fraud, voter fraud, in nationally in some of the swing states, they perfected that fraud in Virginia. And it was a very notice. If you just take a look at what happened in Virginia between, say, 2012 to 2020, that period of time, you will note that there was a push. The very first thing they did, they changed the voting laws. They don't require a signature, somebody to sign to verify that they're qualified to vote, that they're a U.S. citizen, to register. And then voter harvesting is now essentially legal in this state. And people are, you know, they're getting like 100% turnout, or even in some cases greater than 100% turnout. How do you know? How is that possible? It's only possible if there's fraud in certain areas of the state. And that's because they have built this fraudulent system. And they may, when I say fraudulent, I mean that it's not legitimate voting, even though it might be done lawfully. Mm-hmm. That's right. The scary thing. It's going to take us a long, long, long time to undo this, if we ever can. But it's got to be done before we ever win in Virginia again.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Now, I don't want to put you on a spot with a candidate, but does a Republican have a chance in the next governor's election?
In my view, I don't think it's possible. Unless you deal with voter fraud and are able to ensure fairness in our election system by making sure that every legitimate vote is cast, but no illegitimate votes are cast. Unless that is done and you have a completely controlled General Assembly by Democrats, including the governorship, so that's never going to happen. So I just don't see. Now, here's the hopeful thing. I don't want to leave this thing depressed. Is people are catching on.
Yes.
And one big segment, you know, I talked about what I did on illegal immigration, but don't take that for a minute. Now, the mainstream media tried to say that those of us who are cracking down on illegal immigration, you know, didn't like Hispanics or whatever, that we're racist for doing so. The truth of the matter is I have a tremendous amount of respect for the Hispanic population. They're hardworking. They're traditional. Believe in law and order. And if you notice that you didn't see a lot of Hispanics involved in all these riots over the past year,
no.
It was mostly white and African-Americans, but you didn't see a lot of Hispanics. Hispanics are waking up. And as they do, they're moving, and they're going to move very, very quickly from the Democratic Party that has left them behind. And they're going to move over to the Republican Party. And it is the fastest growing demographic in this country. When that happens, the Republican Party will once again be a dominant party. But that may take another couple of election cycles, at least here in Virginia.
You know, I think that's exactly right. And I think that this whole business about was there cheating or fraud in the election, you know, from the founding forward, the core of American political philosophy was that man was a fallen creature, and that self-interest drove him. If you look at this election, you have to say, if Biden got 82 million votes, 82 million votes, 82 million people voted against their own economic self-interest. And that's, when you start from that premise, you have to look for the evidence, because it's going to be there. So many people would not have voted against what they had for the first time since Reagan. Jobs, low inflation, low interest rates, low mortgages. It's just transparently a fraud. The whole election was a fraud. And how we dig out from this one is going to be very interesting to see, sir.
Well, but that's a wrap for you, Mike. Mr. Stewart, last words.
Don't lose hope. This country is very resilient. It's going to come back, and it's going to come back as people wake up to the fraud that's occurring in the West. Look, here's the problem with the Republican Party is we don't have guts. We never go far enough. The problem with the Democrats is they always, always, always go too far. They're going too far. The progressive wing of that party, which has now pretty much become dominant, is going too far. They're going to push America too far in the wrong direction, and people will react. And at that point, we can start correcting our country.
Corey Stewart, thanks for being on Two Mics. We appreciate your time today, sir.
Have a great come back if you can.
God bless America, and God bless Donald Trump.
Yes, God bless you too.
You could save big when you bundle home and auto with Progressive, so you went online to check it out. But then you saw a link for a survey about which type of bread you are. And now you're on question 17, barely scratching the surface of your bread identity. You always thought of yourself as a brioche, but are you actually more of a pumpernickel? Ah, yes. They said it was easy to save money bundling with Progressive, but they forgot about the rest of the internet. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Now more than ever, people want to know if there's anything they can do to help. And the answer is yes at BioLife Plasma Services. Your plasma is desperately needed to create life-changing medicines to help treat people with immune deficiencies, those who are most at risk right now. When you donate plasma at BioLife, you can earn up to $700 in your first month. Check out our new St. Paul location opening March 20th or visit BioLifePlasma.com to learn more about donating plasma. BioLifePlasma.com.